Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Today we're going to talk about shame. Shame tells us that I am bad, that guilt has been ignored for too long and it's an overdrive, or I'm overexposed.
Shame also can come from internal thoughts as well as external responses, perceived or real. And as we think about that, one of the things as I've been thinking about shame, this shame podcast, is going back to the idea of when we talked about fear, that everything in shame is some level of fear of rejection. It's a very relational experience versus an independent experience. So I think that's really important to realize. And I would say, I'm still researching it, but that I see most shame as an irrational fear, not an irrational fear of rejection, but an irrational fear that you're not enough or you're not lovable.
It's an irrational fear of a negative thought of self. Yeah, it's saying like, I should have had all control in the situation. And the fact I didn't, I have shame. Always shame is connected to this, we would call it in therapy, especially with EMDR, a negative cognition. It's a negative thought. For some reason, I'm holding myself to a higher standard than anyone really needs to be in this moment. And I'm having shame in the fact that I didn't succeed under that higher standard.
Yeah, shame is funny because we'll hold ourselves to standards that we won't hold other people to. Like, you'll see shame in interesting ways. Like, someone will always be the first to help others, but then not ever receive help or ask for help themselves. That's a shame thing.
Yeah, definitely. And then if someone else is saying, oh, I should be having shame, it's funny because we look at them and I would say the reaction like 80% of the time is you look at that person and go, why do you think you need to be held to that higher standard, right?
What makes you so special?
Yeah, it's like when I hear men and women, most recently, I've had a lot of clients who are women say, well, I should have the laundry done, dinner cooked, the kids are cleaned, the kids' homework's done, this. And the fact that I don't, I'm such a mess. And I look at them and I go, why do you feel like that should be done? But then you look at your neighbor and you're like, she's having a really hard time. And the fact she's getting out of bed is amazing. And I'm like, so she's allowed to have that empathy, but you can't have that.
As you're talking, one of the things that's coming up for me is there's actually components of shame. One of them is rejection, self-rejection, rejection from other people that then moves into self.
Yeah.
Because when we have rejection from other people and we don't move it into self, that is not shame. That's guilt and or humiliation, which are both powerful emotions, but they're not shame. The next thing that happens is this belief of distance, that we are somehow unique versus that we enjoy this connectedness to the idea of being human. And the third part is that it's that we go into a deep emotion like fear of what's going to happen versus looking at our experience.
So far, every emotion, including this one, we've talked about the information it gives us and that it can be based in reality or not. Shame is the one emotion that only ever lies. If you're getting a message from shame, it is not based in reality.
And that's because we're not in our common humanity and we're not in full perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So shame is not a natural emotion that we are just born and innately just have. Shame is very much a learned type of emotion. It's still a valid emotion. It's still a real emotion, but it's not something like you don't have a baby who spills food on the floor and the baby's response isn't shame. Okay. The baby's response is, oh, a reaction, right? What did I do? It's more curiosity. It's more, it might feel a little bad in the sense of, well, now I don't have my food anymore because now it's there, right? But it's not shame. And shame comes through experiences of other people saying, you shouldn't do this. You should feel this. Or aren't you feeling bad for mom who now has to pick that up? And so it's a reaction that we learn from seeing other people feel shame. We see when someone makes a mistake, instead of just saying, oh my gosh, I made a mistake. How silly of me. They hide it. They feel really embarrassed by the fact they have it. Or it's a response that we literally are told, you should feel shame.
Yes, particularly around emotions is usually where my clients I find are first have shame instilled in them, that they're crying or they feel anger and they're told that they shouldn't feel that way, or they got to wrap it up, or it's in some kind of public setting or potentially public setting, and they're told to knock it off because someone might see you.
Or even if they're too happy. I've had some kids that the parents are like, you are way too excited to be. I worked at Disney World, fun fact. It was interesting to see the kids would come in and some parents were like, yeah, this solicits a huge, exciting response. Sometimes it's their first time coming. They're there for a holiday and they see the new things. Like it is an exciting thing. But then you have those parents and they were usually ones who've been to Disney World a lot or they didn't really want to go. But you see those parents that the kids would be so excited. The parents are like, knock it off, get quiet. Like, no. And they literally were like, the kids were taught you can't show that enthusiasm, which the amount of money they're paying to go there, the kids can flip out and be so excited, right? That's a lot of exciting things happening.
I think as you're talking about this, the other thing that I'm noticing is that shame is learned, which is what Haley said. Mm-hmm. But remember, we learn in a couple different ways. Mm-hmm. One of the ways we learn is direct learning and then indirect learning. So yeah. We can experience ourselves. The other thing is we can watch other people feel a rejection. And we don't always have enough information around what that rejection looks like. It could be a rejection in the media. It could be a rejection publicly. But when we see that and we see that rejection, our brain can say, okay, I want to avoid rejection because it mm-hmm. feels bad and it feels like guilt and it feels that disconnection. We talked about attachment with guilt too, right? It feels mm-hmm. detaching. And so I want to move away from that.
Well, you're reminding me of our teenagers. Yeah. You're reminding me of our teenage response, right? We get teenagers all the time and they come in and they try to be all cool. Right. And most of the time that's out of shame of, I can't talk about my emotions because so-and-so, one of the popular kids at school, says that we don't need to talk about those things because the weird kid in school was talking about emotions or was showing emotions. Oh my gosh. Right. And they got teased. And so I don't want to be that kid. And so they see that, like you said, it's observed and no one maybe directly says it to them, but I'm automatically thinking of my teens that I end up having to be. So where did you learn that you need to be totally Joe Cool and not saying anything?
And the way that we most often, that's a great way to mm-hmm. indirectly learn it. A way we indirectly learn it at home is mothers that don't want to be in family pictures because mom isn't comfortable in her own body, or dad doesn't take his shirt off at the pool. These are obviously very shame-based body image type things. And we think that we can counteract our own shame around our body if we are really conscious about being body positive for our kids. But if our actions for ourselves don't match what we're telling our kids, that mixed message is picked up by the kid indirectly, and they will develop shame around their body anyway.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that sometimes we see with that indirect message is that we move into what we think is appropriate in public, and then we hide things we're ashamed of in private. And when we do that, that inconsistency actually builds shame. So for example, if I am trying to be healthy and I eat a cookie and then I'm like, oh, I better not tell anyone I ate a cookie because they need to see me as a really healthy person because that's my public image or whatever, versus normalizing that there's a healthy way to do something and there's an unhealthy way to do it. And I want to move it out of body image and go a little bit to the cultural thing. One of the ways that I see shame develop around sexuality is that we talk a lot about what not to do with sexuality, and we swing to generalization of everything's okay versus nothing's okay. And we steer away from the conversation about information versus just how to be perceived sexually. And that creates a lot of shame too, because the perception without any context in how to manage that privately becomes mm-hmm. very difficult for people.
And it's usually not phrased in a way of, these are our values because of what we do for ourselves. We often phrase it in the way of, you have to dress a certain way or behave a certain way because of how it affects other people, which is very shame-based. That goes back to shame says I'm overexposed or I'm bad. I'm bad because I crossed this value. You know, other people have this value and I've crossed their value, which is, and so again, shame always lies, right? Our sexuality is about us. It's not about other people.
Yeah. It also, you bring up a good point. Again, I will die on the hill of values. Shame.
There are worse hills to die on, really.
I think Jesus died on the
hill. I'm in good company. People are going to be like, you guys have a warped sense of religion. That's fine. We
don't shame our religious
beliefs. It's true. I think a lot of shame also, what's connecting for me as you guys are both talking about this, is we have a set identification of values that to each of us are personal. And when someone else either sees that our values are not what they feel like should be, or we see that our values, we see that we don't connect with the values of someone else, I think automatically shame just starts growing there. So it's the idea of, let's say Jennifer has the value of honesty and respect and this, and it's not that I don't respect or like any of those values, but I'm looking at them and saying, you know what? One of my values is humor and one of my values is authenticity. And it's not, again, that my values are subpar, because Jennifer has some great values, but my humor value can be just as important to me as that, right? When you look at a list of values, that is one of the core values you can have.
And so, I love that you said that, because then we come on this other end of, when I see Haley living a value that doesn't honor my, maybe my highest value, and I do value humor, this is just an example, you're good. But then I might say she is bad, which actually moves me into deeper shame. Because if I'm not perfect, if I accidentally tell a joke, then I'm actually going to shame myself. So when you give other people shame, you actually increase your own personal shame, because you expect that people, that perfectionism, right? And perfectionism is bred in shame. There's no such thing as perfectionism without shame.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you're not being perfect, then that must mean that you're just being, again, I use that word, authentic, right? Because perfectionism, you look at things, and the reason why we see beauty in the world is not because it is cookie cutter. It's not because every mountain range is the exact same height, or it has a really good degree of decrease compared to the other ones, right? The reason we find them beautiful is because somehow that mountain range has been able to, I guess, glorify its imperfections. Variety. Yeah. And it's showing them, and it's showing how like great that is in comparison with the valley below. Right. And so if we're looking at it from a perfectionist mindset, first of all, it's not natural. Let's just be honest. Nothing about perfectionism is natural. You can't naturally have the world's view of perfectionism. Now, to be perfectionist versus to be perfect can be different. Perfect implies that it is what is needed in the moment, not necessarily that it is perfectionism in the sense of we have now created a science based off that.
And I would almost call that perfection execution, right? And you can see this on a game. You might play a level without any mistakes, but that's not how you do everything unless you've analyzed it. It's like doing a Rubik's cube. And then all of a sudden, when I started seeing people do Rubik's cubes, I was like, how did they figure that out? And then I realized that there are instructions online how to do it perfectly every time. And I was like, oh, well, anyone can be perfect at this. It's not amazing. So it lost its magic, but it also created no shame out of my ability to not do it. I just hadn't spent the time to figure it out versus you're not smart if you can't do a Rubik's cube.
Yeah. I think it's in contrast too. It's you're quite smart if you can follow the directions of how to do it, because I've seen those directions and those are not the easiest thing to understand and comprehend. And so, yeah, it's people are putting the, especially when it comes to shame, they're emphasizing the wrong point with shame. They're not looking at it and saying, well, what you did is actually quite difficult as well, right? They're looking at it and saying, again, with perfectionism and shame, you're not doing it according to what I think is needing to be graded on. Therefore, you are faulty.
Now, all of these things are chronically stressful, and chronic stress, emotional wounds, and or trauma are the root of shame, and shame is the root of pride. Anytime you see someone that's arrogant or proud, that is just coming from a place of shame, which seems like they're antithetical to each other, but they're really two sides of the same coin.
Which is interesting, because in Brené Brown's new book, Atlas of the Heart, she talks about narcissism as being rooted in shame, where it is seen the outward response to narcissism is grandiosity, this inability to make a mistake and those kinds of things. But those who understand the true psychology behind narcissism, which is a personality disorder, understand it is rooted and based in shame and self-loathing. It's a very
fragile ego, yeah.
How does one recognize shame then? I know, Jennifer, you've done a lot of research to that. What do you think is the difference? We mentioned guilt last time. we're looking at shame right now. How do you recognize you've gone into shame? What do you think is one of the like trademarks?
Shame pushes us to hide, to deny, or to lie, which are really all the same thing. So if we're being pushed to be small or to avoid, that's a good indicator that we're in shame.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take that one step further to understand when you're doing those things, that you're actually attempting to control something that feels out of control. When you're in shame, you feel out of control. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to do whatever it takes to feel in control. And so the hiding, the lying, denying.
You're good. It all sounds good. And awful.
Is all a need to control the situation and the relationship and the attachment. So if we'll go back to the cookie, if I feel like I can't tell Taylor I had a cookie, or I can't tell Haley I, you know, went and had her favorite croissant without her because she will reject me in our relationship.
I would.
Right? Because you got to share croissants with Haley. then I'm going to start to control it by hiding, lying, denying that it happened.
And I think you bring up a good point too, when I'm thinking in contrast with guilt, because that is the easy contrast there. What you're mentioning is there is no easy foil for the shame. When it comes to guilt, you can say, okay, I feel guilty, but you also see there's an end in sight of where that guilt is, right? With shame, when I say there's no foil, there's nothing that's going to make that shame resolve in a quick, timely, healthy feeling manner, right? It's forever kind of feels like it's going to pull on you. And now I've got another weight I'm adding to the bag.
And I'm going to pull in language that we used last week about guilt when we talk about the attachment, rupture, and repair. Mm-hmm. Because there's no healthy accountability, because it's irrational, mm-hmm. we can't repair shame. And in our relationship with other people, we have to repair it in ourselves. And that's one of those things is, how do I make it okay that I ate a croissant without Haley? I don't go to Haley and just say, hey, I ate a croissant without you. And she, if I'm guilty, then she can say, well, I had a croissant without you yesterday too, so we're okay, right? But if we go into this place where I say, I told her and I still feel like a jerk, that's my shame. Mm-hmm. I don't feel the repair is possible because the irrational belief around what the expectation was in the relationship.
And it's good to observe too, like, what if I was a jerk and I was like, you should feel bad, right? I'm now promoting shame. So there doesn't necessarily have to be shame in that situation, but it's okay to look at it and say, I'm in an environment where people are promoting me to have shame. Because Jennifer could leave that situation and be like, all right, I let Haley know that something that we share as like a thing we do is we go and get croissants. I love that we're using this. It's all I have.
With my husband, we'd be watching a TV show.
Yes.
That we were supposed to watch together.
That's
right?
Because
that's a rule in a relationship.
Yeah,
it
definitely.
Absolutely is.
And that's why I'm single. Just, I just like to watch things by myself.
Guilty.
I know. Here. But with that, it's okay to look at it and say, maybe Jen goes to her husband and says, hey, I watched that TV show and she's worried. And she's like, is this shame? Is this guilt? And he goes, you know what? It's okay. Like, you were bored. I get it. It happens. And then she goes, okay, cool. I can drop that. Right. But in that same situation happens, and his response is, instead, you should feel bad. That was awful of you. How dare you betray our marriage? Right. This kind of a thing. She's going to all of a sudden feel shame. And it's okay to look at it and say, sometimes it can be an internal trigger for shame because of my learned behaviors, because of, you know, A, B, and C. But sometimes it's also looking and saying, that's a shame promoting environment right there, right? So it's okay to recognize, like, it wasn't just me bringing up the shame, something on the outside triggered it at that moment.
Right. And that person has to resolve shame within them versus, yes, if I say, I'm never going to watch that show without you again, it will or not resolve the shame. It moves into compliance, obligation, and these are all parts of fear.
And shame speaks in absolutes, like always and never.
And then you have to decide from there, again, values and boundaries, is what your husband's saying going along with your values or boundaries if you're feeling shame? And if it is, then, okay, how do I resolve the shame within myself? What do I need to do? If what your husband is saying is not following with your values and boundaries, then it's about saying, okay, what kind of a boundary do I need to have? So that way this situation is not considered an appropriate situation with my interactions with him. So how do I say, okay, if you're going to talk like that, I'm going to go to the other room right now and I'm going to let you resolve what you need to, but you know, that's your burden to bear. I can't pick up that shame for you.
I love that. As you're talking, I'm thinking we need to add that no husbands were harmed in the making of this podcast.
And no husbands were found on my end. It was great.
See? And Taylor is thinking about how he watched that show without his wife years ago.
I was in so much trouble.
There you go.
It was oblivion. So which culture on earth does not have shame? Pop quiz.
None of them.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. Shame's the human condition. Even uncontacted tribes in the Amazon have shame.
And again, the more rigid the culture, the more absolutes, the more shame can be found. And so rigidity is one of those things that we need to recognize as not the healthy, it's not a healthy boundary.
Yeah.
So we don't get rigid about behavior. We die on the hill of values.
You had a good question earlier too, Jen. Did you want to bring that up or did you have something else?
I just wanted to go to some basic things to move out of shame now that we've identified it. So there are three things that we can do to move into self-compassion, which is how we heal shame. And the three things are self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. And I want to talk about mindfulness real quick because mindfulness is the act of calming ourselves down. So when we've talked about coping skills, our earlier podcast we did on self-care, those types of mindfulness things will keep us from moving into shame more often. So as you've neglected yourself and those kinds of things, you might find that you're experiencing shame / irrational thought more often. So moving into that mindfulness, feeling it in your body, working through it, breathing with it are ways to move into the other two, which is the self-kindness and common humanity.
And along with mindfulness, it's also looking at your timeline of what you're paying attention to, right? You are going to feel shame if you're thinking about every past situation you have been part of that was shameful. You're going to feel shame if you think of every future one you potentially have because you keep making the same mistakes. It's more difficult to feel shame if you're looking in the moment and saying, what am I doing right now? Am I doing anything right now that's shameful? Usually, if you're thinking that question and you're trying to pay attention, you're in a pretty good place. But it's about saying, okay, right now in my situation currently, I'm doing the best I can. I'm acknowledging I had some things in the past. I'm acknowledging the scariness of the future, but right now I'm doing okay. And that's going to be when it's easier to feel like self-compassion in those other.
And a shame mindset, that perfectionism like we were talking about before, is if I made a mistake, I must not have been doing my best. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely not true.
And to go to our best fairies. So our best, again, we talked about fear can move our IQ points. It can be down. So this moves to that self-kindness aspect of it. So for example, one of the ways we'd say, how do you do self-kindness is you talk like a dear friend. So one of the dynamics I love between Taylor Haley and I is that if one of us says something shaming about ourselves, the other one is actually really quick, usually to say it in sarcasm, because that is the language of our group, but to say things like, well, of course you did that, you know? And so we kind of move to that dear friend moment.
And it steps us out of it like, oh yeah, that was... Like, oh, Taylor, you're such an idiot. Of course you did. Oh, right, Jen. Yeah.
Right. My usually
that wouldn't work for everyone. Like, yeah, if that's not your style, though, that's just ours.
Often Taylor will make a mistake and I'll say yes, because you were supposed to memorize the whole dictionary. That's a rule.
Because that's exactly what my shame would have been telling me.
it makes me think of like watching the Olympics, which I do love doing. And you see these people, first of all, I love the memes where it's like, put a normal person next to them doing all these events, because we always are so shaming to them. Like, how could you only do
a triple lutz when it was a quadruple?
How could you? Right. And I look at ice skaters and I'm like, I can't even stand up straight. And then they're over there doing all these things and people are like, oh, they didn't do as much.
I would happily fall off the 10 meter high dive for people. Absolutely.
That is a belly flop and this is a dive. Right. But it's, you look at them and I love it because there's this idea of they're doing the best they could ever do. They are definitions of perfection most of the time, right? And I would say actually all the time, they're definitions of perfection, even in how they fail, because most of the time you don't hear them being like, and he's running the 100 meter dash and he forgot to wear his shoes, right? It's not like it's anything that it's just like, okay, obvious, or he didn't tie his shoes, right? You're looking at it and going, no, the reason he's not succeeding is because A, he's either severely injured himself, or B, he's a human. And for some reason, stepping down, he tripped. We all do that. I trip on nothing. And then this guy who's in the Olympics is doing this. And we look at it and we automatically say, let's shame him. Because yes, we're going to completely disregard the fact that he's already perfect,
But and I'm going to add in the mindfulness around time frame here, right? Because mm-hmm. in the Olympics, you have to be perfect at a certain date and time.
Yep.
Versus have you ever done it perfectly? Mm-hmm. And the number of people who have done it perfectly is far greater than the number of people who will do it perfectly at that certain date or time. I have often felt like the times I have shown up and executed something perfectly, nobody has been there.
Yeah.
To notice it. But when I have failed, it does feel like the audience has grown exponentially.
Yeah, I get you. And so I think when you're talking about defeating shame, you have to put into contrast, there's a balance of saying, in this moment, am I doing the best I can? Yes. And also not dwelling on past or future, but saying, in the past, have I done better? Absolutely. It's back to strength-based therapy. Okay. We need to recognize the fact of we have done successful things in our past and we need to apply the fact that we could. And that just helps us be able to project the fact, not assume, but to project the fact that we're prone to do better. We're prone to be better. We're prone to be able to succeed. So that combats that shame.
Some days our best is going to look like everyone ate cold cereal for all three meals. And we got to bed. Everyone was alive and they are fed, and that is success. Mm-hmm. And the next week, it's going to look very different.
Yeah, yeah.
And when your children get older, Taylor, they will feed themselves.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. I want to mention the last one, which is common humanity, because I think it's really important. And I see this as an area when we talk about how therapists go into the field to heal themselves. I often think, oh, in what way did that happen for me? But common humanity is that way of, mm-hmm. I really, by being a therapist, have seen so many people in so many different experiences. People will often say, Jen, is that normal?
Yeah.
And the truth is, it's within the range of normal. Where it is on the spectrum and how to move away from it is a much more important question than, has anyone else in the world ever done this? And when we actually look at change, one of the very first things people need is to realize you are not the only one. Mm-hmm. And so when we experience this disenfranchised experience through, nobody ever has posted on social media that they had a failure, right? When teens look, they will then think, well, failure is not normal. But the truth is, we don't post our practice tapes usually. We post our successes. And so going into that place of common humanity means to know that this podcast, when it feels polished, it's because Haley edited it, not because Jen, Taylor, and Haley say the perfect thing every time.
Yeah. Back to the Olympic idea, looking at someone tripping on the Olympics, when we look at it in common humanity, we've all tripped. We've all done that. But for some reason, we take out the common humanity and insert shame when it's in front of a bunch of people. Even when you're walking down the street, I used to hate it in high school. And it wasn't because anyone tripped them, but like that moment you like trip yourself and then you fall and everyone's like, loser, right? I just hated it because I was always like, why am I feeling shame? Because I do. I'm not going to deny it. Why am I feeling shame for the fact that this just happened, or the fact that there was a broken step and I fell down it? And then all of a sudden I'm the loser. Who's the person who's keeping up the steps, right? Not that they're a loser. I don't want to shame them either, but it's the idea of saying that common humanity, it really speaks volumes when you're with a community that you see more common humanity. That is when you really understand how much that is helpful.
I find it interesting that some of the techniques that we talk about for public speaking is really this common humanity, that old adage of imagine everyone in their underwear. That may or may not be healthy for everyone, but I will tell you this. The idea is that we are commonly human. If you realize that everyone in the audience has had a moment when they have been imperfect, then you will also realize that if you are imperfect, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, meet your hero sometime and it will be incredibly disillusioning. And then shame will be not as big a problem for you.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as
that is guaranteed if you meet any of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a lot less entertaining in person.
False. You're highly entertaining, maybe less edited in person.
Oh, much less edited. Much less. No, I think I'm with you with that. I think that that's, again, back to perfectionism and how it so is best friends with shame. It just is the worst.
As we wrap up on shame, I think it's really important that you move into acknowledging it, speaking it out loud. Oh, that's shame. Reduces the power. Again, we're not denying it. We're not hiding it. We're not moving to that. Acknowledging that we have shame is one of the most healing things that we can do.
Speaking out loud with someone safe. Yeah, that's not going to judge. Yeah.
Right. So the Olympic judges in your life, whoever they may be, that is not who you should be going to.
Right.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We would love to hear from you.